It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And welcome everybody to the show that's not above asking the hard question. Like, what if the Lakers won another national title and no one cared? Finance, yeah, money. A lot of money we're talking about. Not much finance involved in it. Anyway, welcome everybody, all the regulars. Thanks for always being there. You're, of course, the reason we get up in the morning. And if you're new to the show, welcome. Try to listen for the whole hour. You might just learn something. We pretty much promise you'll learn something. It could be useless, but usually it's not. Because who is affected by anything more than they're affected by money, and especially in times of uncertainty? So investors, just people wandering the streets, people wondering if they're going to get a job, people are making all kinds of money because there's a lot of those out there right now too. You're all here for some reason. And if you'd like to tell us what that reason is, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. Lines are open and callers go to the front. We will, of course, have a trivia question right after the break. And we'll tell you what's going on, which I just can't quite explain. Sometimes I come in here and the week was easily explainable. I always like to come up with one word. And I can't this week. I thought about it all morning. But my description this week was it didn't feel that good until we put the numbers together. And actually, it was a pretty nice week.
Yeah, I figured it ended the week up, but it wouldn't be very big, which was exactly what happened, because we did have a nice day on Monday.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the week, we just kind of drifted.
It's easier to forget Monday if you have a few sluggish days afterwards.
Yeah, and then Friday, we gave up some gains later in the afternoon. So that we could have closed out even better week had we stopped at noon.
It was almost a great week.
Yeah, definitely. But it wasn't a bad week by any stretch. We definitely gained some ground. All three indexes posted modest gains. And the Dow gained just 0.1%. The S&P gained 0.2%. And the NASDAQ, 0.8%. So really not too bad. I mean, if you consider over the course of a week, if you could do that every week, you'd have a pretty nice year put together.
Yeah, last week was the first time in quite some time that we have seen the year-to-date numbers all be positive.
Mm-hmm.
And to make them all more positive this year, I consider it something of a victory.
Yeah, and October has proven to be a really good month for stocks so far.
Mm-hmm.
All three indexes are up more than 3%. And year-to-date, there's a little bit more disparity in the numbers. The Dow is up just 0.2%, but the NASDAQ is up over 30%, which, wow, that's incredible.
In fact, I'm going to ask a trivia question about that before too long.
Outside of the U.S., it was not nearly as good of a week for stocks. China managed to gain almost 2%, but almost every other country was negative. Hong Kong, India, Spain, Russia, and the U.K. were all down more than 2%. Emerging markets also took a step back this week, falling about 0.6%. And commodities were dragged down by silver, of all things, falling more than 4%. I don't know what happened there.
I think it was just a bit of profit taking, probably.
Yeah, it was silver. Our silver ETF was up more than 27% last quarter, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, so giving up 4% in a week, I can live with that.
Yeah. Gold also fell. Oil gained just a slight amount. And then fixed income regained some of its losses from last week. Bond prices rose pretty much across the board. So that was a bit surprising, although just because they're already so elevated, to see more buying in bonds right now, I'm just not understanding.
It's a
flight to safety. And if you're expecting some turbulence around the election or something like that, it might be a good place to park some cash.
I've got a couple words of wisdom to a lot of people buying bonds. It's about the definition of safety.
Yeah. Well,
if safety is all relative, okay, it probably varies less than the stocks. But if safety means not losing your money, that's not where I'm going.
Well, as a short-term play, if you are expecting near-term volatility, it might be a good short-term parking spot.
But try to find some yield while you're sitting there, though.
You barely any, and I think you're probably better off in cash at this point.
Yep. Earning nothing and losing nothing is better than earning nothing and potentially losing something.
True.
That's the way I look at it.
If you think the energy sector looks attractive because it is down so much for the year, 47%, think again. The sector continues to lose ground, dropping another 2% this week alone. Financials, healthcare, and materials were the other sectors to lose ground this week, while utilities, technology, and communication services were the winners, all gained more than 0.7%, so not a bad week. And those utilities looking very, very overbought right now, though. So, again, sort of a safety play that's trading in very high territory. So that it's weird because the market's going up, but a lot of the assets that are being purchased are defensive in nature. So
if you've owned utilities a long time and you have a really big gain in it, unless it's in an IRA or other non-taxable account, I would probably not dump them and wait for them to go down because you're still getting a really good yield and you have the built-in profit. So if it drops a little bit, they'll come back later. Meanwhile, you would be losing the only good yield that's really out there.
Yeah, it's true. Well, there's good yield in stocks right now, but but then you're subjecting yourself to a lot more risk.
Yep.
So it's a I think we just had this conversation yesterday in the office, or actually on an online meeting, but everyone wants to know, where can I get yield without any risk right now? And the answer is you can't.
That's
it just
correct.
Does not exist. There is no safe place to park money that will pay you a decent return.
That's got to be the number one or number two question we hear these days in our day jobs. Where can I go to get some yield?
You can't.
Yep.
It was another busy week for economic data, unlike last week. But despite the doom and gloom you might be hearing on the news, most of the data beat expectations. Actually, it was a pretty good week, all in all.
Heck of a week. If anybody would report these things, this election would be a blowout.
The week kicked off on a high note Monday with the Small Business Optimism Report coming in at 104 versus an expected 100.9. This was almost a four-point jump from last week, or last month, rather, and it brought the level back to the pre-COVID levels. That is
pretty a lot of things are back there.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking considering small businesses have been hit much harder than large businesses. And poor sales was named as the biggest problem, which is the normal case during a during and coming out of a recession. So,
yeah, but that's falling as a leading indicator, you might say.
And it
it's becoming less important all the time.
It didn't peak anywhere near where it did during the Great Recession either. Speaking of small business, according to the Census Bureau, 1.57 million business applications were filed in Q3.
That was the killer number of the week.
It is a record. Businesses with planned wages rose 70% to the highest rate since 2008, which says to me that there's a lot of people who might have gotten laid off and are thinking, how can I make some money? Well, I think I'll start my own small business.
Yep. They were all records by a mile. And it makes you wonder a little bit if maybe the economy, when it does come all the way back, and we'll talk a little bit more about this after the break, it is certainly partway or most of the way back, and we're getting some GDP numbers in. But it looks like there's going to be a little bit of change in the nature of how business is done. I think you're going to see a lot more people sticking to their sort of home-based business model.
Yeah, definitely.
So in other words, it's not just the young people who've been doing that for quite some time. I think now we're getting into an era where there's going to be a little more on the older side doing the same things. People have a lot of skills. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. We have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You call Ken at 904-636-7888. All right. We're going to talk about the NASDAQ today for trivia. It hasn't been around all that long because I guess there wasn't enough technology back then to even think about it. But in the 70s, the NASDAQ composite was created. And since then, it's been quite successful, as you probably know if you've invested in it over time. It's up 30% this year so far, and that's huge, and it would be very strange if it closed there because that would be two in a row. But what's not strange is a 20% plus year in the NASDAQ. Since its inception in the 70s, how many years has it returned 20% or more? The whole number, I'll take it plus or minus one, of course. So there's your question of the day, so to speak. All right, a few more little issues with the, or I guess you'd call them observations with the market this week.
Yeah, a couple of other data points. Retail sales also beat expectations. It rose 1.9% month over month versus expectations of 0.8%. Retail sales have now increased 5 months in a row. That's not something you typically see during a recession. The COVID recession, that leads me to believe that the COVID recession may go down as the shortest recession in history.
I'm going to take it one step further. There was no recession. See, I'm a purist. I go by the technical.
The two consecutive quarters.
Yep. Of negative GDP growth.
First and second, though.
Did first turn out negative?
I believe it did.
Oh, right. I'm going to take it back, pending investigation.
Okay, fair enough. Yep, retail sales are now 3.7% higher than pre-COVID January levels. So we have now exceeded it by almost 4%, the all-time high in January. During the Great Recession, it took 3 years for retail sales to take out their previous high.
Yeah.
The biggest gains have come in non-store retail, which is basically code for online sales. And the biggest decline has come in bars and restaurants, which is not unexpected. Gas stations have had the second biggest decline, also
partly
not surprising.
Pricing.
And also people not driving.
Right.
So,
but they're starting to again.
Yeah, traffic is definitely up.
It's not changing pricing very much.
No, it's pretty stable at this point, which is not something we've said about gas prices
it's
for
kind
a long
of a
time.
Stupid way to measure retail sales anyway, when you include gas stations, because the price of gas is so volatile. The fact that it's higher or lower from one period to another is basically meaningless data.
Yeah.
You know, number of gallons sold, things like that.
Yeah.
That would be.
Well, that's why they strip it out a lot, too,
exactly.
to look at the actual number. So all of this is true, and yet New York, California, Michigan, certain other states still on lockdowns in a lot of cases. So imagine where we would be today if everything was reopened.
They'll open on the 4th.
Maybe. But it's just pretty incredible that we're up almost 4% from prior highs with only, 75% of the country sort of reopened.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty crazy.
People are spending some dough.
So third quarter earnings season is here, and heading into it, analysts were raising forecasts over the last month, raising them pretty substantially.
Yeah, very.
This is usually an indicator that it's good and bad. So mm-hmm. It's good because people are expecting the economy to do better and companies to do better than what they initially thought. But the problem is that when earnings announcements come out and expectations have been raised on paper, then it always appears that the actual expectations of investors go even higher than what has been put on that paper. And what that means is that a company will come out, they'll beat earnings, they'll beat revenue, and the stock price will go down. And that's exactly what we're seeing so far.
Yep.
We've had 32 companies report, 81% have beat on earnings and 75% on revenue. Both those numbers are fantastic. It all sounds great, but those 32 stocks have dropped an average of 1.7% on earnings day.
Yeah, go
so,
figure.
Yeah. So if that trend continues, that means that we're going to have a blowout earnings season and the stock market will go down. So you just never know, but those numbers are really, really strong, and I hope they keep them up.
Yeah, you can't really predict people, but you can predict certain things, like the expectations are going to be driving the market for some weeks in advance. And I think a lot of these things, instead of having good news be good news could be bad news, as you said. But I think more than that, there is just so much indecision prior to this election that nobody wants to go crazy on anything. But there were some things that were real interesting in my little research this morning. Some of the things that got really nailed by COVID in March have come back unbelievably. I think I have a couple of numbers here. Maybe I didn't put them there.
What types of things?
Things
are you
like
talking
Bed Bath and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
For one, because retail was basically shut down. And the big one, I got to find it. I wrote them down somewhere. here we go. Wayfair. See, online retailing has naturally done really well.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Amazon. That's what most of us think about when we talk about.
But Target and Walmart both did really well.
Walmart
online
just knocked them dead. Target knocked them dead on the online. But listen to this one. Wayfair, since March 18th, is up 1,274%.
In sales or in stock? Not in stock price.
In stock price.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
And it's second by a mile.
Hmm.
Overstock, who was, they have stores, but apparently very big in the online business. Overstock is up 2,977% since March.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
There are a lot of others that would be exceptional and wonderful and all that, the 80, 90, 100, 110%, but they just kind of get left in the dust by those two.
Hmm.
But the other side of that is you have to know, just by doing some quick math, is if we're giving them away. $2, $2.50.
Well, I'll tell you, I've shopped online at both those places, and I understand why no one buys there. They're online, but they're more expensive than going to the store.
Sorry?
Yeah, I've never found a good deal on those.
Their stock price has gone the other direction on that. So what can you say? I can only say, looking back on it, I wish I'd done it, but
yeah.
Everybody can wish that.
Hindsight's 20/20.
In fact, I didn't even get back into retail. In fact, I'm not really back into retail yet. It's just something that if you are a real gambler, and I'm not, well, maybe a little, but really not. If you're a real gambler and took a chance on some of these things, oh, my God, made some money. If you made that much money, you should call us at the office.
It's not a bad idea.
And we'll tell you how to preserve it.
Yeah.
It's one thing.
685-1505, or find us online at vanweefinancial.com.
Yes, and you can schedule right there on the website, and that first hour will cost you absolutely nothing. And it can be done, of course, in person. It can be done on the phone. It can be done on GoToMeeting, or pretty much anything that you are comfortable doing right now. And we should talk a little about this, too. In the office, we are observing all the protocols. Masks will be worn depending on who's there. Some people don't care. Some people do. And we have disinfectant wipes all over the place. We keep our crowd down so that we're trying to only have one client in the office at any given time. So we're trying to do our best to comply with the common sense things that are implemented right now without ruining everyone's life. But if you look back and say, well, the markets have been okay this year, but I haven't done a really good job, or I've been exceptional, or if we just want to say, how am I doing? Would I hire me as an investment advisor if I had it to do over again? We get that a lot, too. So don't ever forget that we have day jobs. It's very important to us, obviously, and very important to a lot of our clients as well. So enough patting ourselves on the back. I have some news, not hard news yet, but I have some soft news for Social Security recipients. So, like me and Sarah, both collecting. You remember about a month ago, the early reports were out, early estimates, and it said that it was most likely that this was going to be another zero year on Social Security because, quote, there's no inflation. Well, there were some serious price drops going on in March and April and May as the COVID was taking hold of the economy and people were out of work and shutting down businesses and so on and so forth. So it seemed all too likely, I guess, that that would happen. And then some other stuff happened. And about a month ago, I read the first article that was estimating that the increase could actually come in, the COLA for Social Security could come in at 1.3%. Now, 1.3% is certainly nothing that I'd get wildly excited about. But it beats a heck out of the zeros we got before or the zero we might have gotten. But there's some news out there. And it bothers me a little bit who's making that news. And I'm not going to tell you until after the break. Because I want to do a little bit of patting people on the back. And I want to do a little bit of yelling and screaming at some people that should have known better. I sometimes wonder what the Republicans in Washington, D.C. are thinking, and other times I wonder if they're thinking. And on this one, they have certainly dropped the ball. So a couple of Democrats have come up with an idea that I think is something worth talking about. So we'll do it right after the break. Do not go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to remind everybody of the trivia question. Since its inception in the 1970s, how many years has the NASDAQ index returned more than 20% during that time? Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How you doing?
All right. So 4 years ago, the last 9 days before the election, the market sold off and sold off hard.
Mm-hmm.
You think we're 12 days out. Do you think we're going to see a repeat where the market just sells off until we get the election result?
Great question.
I'll tell you exactly about the end of January.
So we've been debating this a lot in the office, and it's so hard to predict because there's just so many different possible outcomes from this election, and I don't think any of them are. Last election going into it, it was almost guaranteed that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and there was a big fear that Trump would win, but he wasn't going to win. And so it definitely felt a lot more certain. This one, I know the national polls reflect a big Biden win, but I think the feeling is that if they were wrong last time, they could be wrong this time. And so I think there's more uncertainty. And I think the conventional wisdom is that the market hates uncertainty. The other thing is there could be a contested election. I know both.
That's the definition of uncertainty.
Yeah, the both teams have hired lawyers and have them ready to go, and I just don't expect it to go smoothly on election night.
Right.
So I think that would be tremendously bad for the market. I don't know when that it would start selling off, but I would not be surprised to see some pre-election volatility. We've been sort of prepping our clients and our portfolios for that for about 2 weeks now. And we're not doing anything drastic, but I feel like the potential downside is a little bit more than the potential upside headed into this election season. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but we're definitely prepping for that possibility.
Yeah. We're meeting with a lot of clients this month. It's always busy the first month after a quarter ends. But it's been particularly busy lately, and our number one question there, right ahead of the question on where can I get some yield, is what should we do about the election? And Adam and I have this philosophy that says if you're going to make a plan, you don't plan for what to do if it turns out this way or if it turns out that way, because that's a little late. So we've been, as he said, we've been lightening up a little bit. We're selling, for people who agree now, this only, we're selling off maybe 5% of equities each week for 3 or 4 weeks on the theory of sort of a reverse dollar cost averaging, that if the market does start going down, we've already sold a few and we're going to sell a few more. If it starts going up, we're still mostly invested. So we're taking that into the election day, just a little bit heavy on cash, but nothing that would indicate that should it come surging afterwards, that people would have a great opportunity cost on it. And I think it's allowing everybody to sleep a little bit better. So the answer is so ethereal, I guess, because we don't have fear of Trump anymore, but we have an excess of hate of Trump. And we aren't fearful enough of Joe because nobody reports what he's going to do. If you read that 106-page manifesto and you look at the news, you can't believe the thing exists in a spot where you can just go out and read it.
The fact is, if we have a divided Congress or the opposite Congress from whoever wins the presidency, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. The economy is very strong headed into the election, well, rebounding very strongly from this little COVID recession. And I think that There's no reason that that wouldn't continue post-election. So I'm pretty optimistic either way.
I think. Tell us, what do you think?
You know, it's hard to figure these things out because the enthusiasm is definitely with Trump. There's no enthusiasm for Biden.
Right.
The corruption stories keep coming out.
On Fox only.
Yeah, and the mainstream media is covering up for Biden. They're carrying his water like nothing. Nobody's ever seen this before, this kind of cover-up. And yet, most of the people out there are not paying attention to the details like we are, and they're just going to the polls and voting with their feelings. Yeah. And that's very troublesome. I read an article also in Market Watch. I think it said that after the election, a lot of times the investors rotate out of growth, go into value. Do you guys think that that'll happen? It's probably already starting.
But there has been a little bit of that already.
That'll reverse itself if the election results go one way.
Yeah, if Biden wins, we think that value is going to continue to underperform because mm-hmm. his tax plan is not friendly to value at all.
Nope.
The tax treatment of dividends would completely change and not for the better, especially for wealthy investors. And
yeah, when you have a double taxation situation and you raise the taxes on both sides, that means there's going to be less dividends.
Yeah, so I don't think that would happen under a Biden win. Under a Trump win, I could make a case for value continuing
Absolutely.
To outperform.
If anything, we're probably looking at another tax cut, which would make those double tax dividends a much better value, if I might use the term. So I think making tactical decisions like that is something you have to do post-election, whereas making the strategic decisions has to be done before the election. That's kind of how we're breaking it down.
Are you guys pretty much loading up on cash and then waiting for the election, and then you're going to redeploy that cash?
Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. I mean, we're not, by loading up, we're talking about carrying higher than normal, but we're not
20-25%.
We're not going 100% or 50% or anything like that.
No.
Just carrying more cash than we normally would.
In fact, we were told the other day about someone who had been to one of these rubber chicken dinner seminars that so many people throw. And the guy was telling everybody to get out of the market and go into 100% cash. And we all looked at each other and said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Is there a half a chance, a quarter of a chance, a 10% chance that he'll be right? Sure. But what if? What if you go out now and then it shoots up? The dumbest thing in the world is to try to time the stock market. It is absolutely, positively impossible.
And you would have missed out on at least 3% this month alone.
Yeah. It's like the old sell in May and go away. Well, put those numbers together between May and November this year, and you would have been a sorry camper if you listened to that advice. And it's not really advice. It's just something that people tend to say because they've always said it. But it doesn't live up to anything. Every study from hundreds of years, it seems, has said, get in, stay in, and make your changes small and do it for a reason.
Yeah, I'm deeply concerned about the Senate falling into the hands of crying Chuck Schumer and stacking the Supreme Court and doing away with the filibuster and giving statehood to Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. This is really, really serious damage that we could do to everything in our society, not just the stock market, if they get in power there.
That is only one outcome of six or seven. That's the problem with that. It is so unlikely that we'll lose both houses of Congress and the White House. But if it happens, that's the scenario, and then we got to talk.
Yeah, I mean, then you do have to really consider what your portfolio looks like at that point.
Exactly.
That's a tougher scenario for sure. I think that is not a likely outcome, despite if you watch the news, they're telling you that it's a blue wave, it's all done, why even vote? But I don't think that is the most likely outcome.
No, I think the dumbest thing in the world is to listen to the news. Yeah. You know, out of the last 92 hours, they have spent 10 minutes talking about the Hunter Biden revelations this week. 10 minutes out of 92 hours. It is our job, if these things prove verifiable, and so far they've been finding a lot of it is our job, the other people, to get that out in public.
Yesterday on CNN.com, I went and looked. There was not one mention the story.
Yep. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable. Keep in touch between now and then. We've got a couple seconds to get out of here. I appreciate the call, and we'll talk to you soon. I don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I think that discussion we just had with Chuck was probably something a lot of people should hear. Nobody's in a panic. We were trying to be very logical, but we did have a caller call in over the break just to sort of thank us for talking about all this stuff. And sometimes you don't know what to think, and even a little bit of confusion is better than not knowing what to think. So Adam and I have been approaching this whole thing as sort of a probability versus history and what will happen. But we were just talking at the end of the break, no matter what happens, and everybody should remember this, after this election, there will be a lot of money spent. The direction it goes will be a little bit dependent on the outcome. It could go a lot more into things like social programs, and it could go a lot into other things. A lot could come out of energy if it goes one way or the other. Our job is not to say get out of the market or get in the market. Our job is to try to determine where is all this money going to flow, because there's going to be some wicked profits made, and all we got to do is get invested in those areas, and things should be fine. You got to remember, the hardest lesson I ever learned in my life started back in the 90s. Wall Street is run by rich liberals. They love Democrats. They are not going to hang their head and cry and run around in the streets, woe is me, if Democrats win. They're going to rejoice.
It's true.
And those are the people that buy major league stock purchases, that kind of thing. So whatever you do, don't fall to the Chicken Little routine. There is no sky falling no matter what happens.
Yep.
And if you care a lot about the outcome, the only thing you can do and the only thing you have to do is be smart and vote.
If you look at the biggest, most profitable companies in the United States, almost
98.9%
are run by
of Twitter
wealthy liberals.
Yep, 98.9% of Twitter donations to politicians are to Democrats.
Yep. So, I mean, it is not going. It wouldn't be the end of the world. There would be money would flow very, very freely out of a Biden administration, and I would be willing to bet that they pass an infrastructure bill in the
first
year that is huge. And just absolutely huge.
And the strange part of that is we need it.
We do. It's true. And I think it would be there would be bipartisan support for it. So that would be, I mean, that would benefit materials companies. That would benefit construction companies. There would be money flowing and jobs. They would, but definitely in different areas, because at the same time, there's a very good chance. What happens to the health insurance companies? I mean, they might push for a government-run healthcare program, and I don't know if private insurance would continue.
I don't know either. But so, they will do something.
Yeah.
You know one thing. They got a lot of power. They can buy a lot of politicians.
Right, but what would be their place? And that would be the kind of things you would have to figure out.
Yeah, we've got to sort that out. All right, well, you know, everybody knows we're conservatives. We vote conservative. But what some people are just finding out is that we can get along with pretty near anybody if we want to. Everybody's lost a couple friends, it seems, but I can't imagine why, because if you have any respect for anybody enough that you would have had a friend before, you should still have it. But I get irritated with politicians in general, and very often with Democrat politicians, and sometimes I get really irritated with Republicans. Here's one of them. I was talking about the Social Security increases coming. All of a sudden, I found a good idea, and it was introduced by two Democrats, Peter DeFazio from Oregon and John Larson from Connecticut. And their bill, it's listed as sort of an emergency bill, but it would raise the cost of living increase for Social Security this year, not zero, not 1.3, but 3%. And I favor that this year. I think it's a fabulous idea. But first, good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was listening to your show, and I just tuned in just now.
Okay.
But it sounds like we're looking for money. We're looking for money. And there's, you know, we've got a lot of money tied up in just some $450 billion a year just to comply with our tax code. We have a $2 trillion underground economy that's going untaxed. We have tax evasion that's upwards of $700 billion a year and growing. There's a lot of money out there,
yep.
Steve. And we could redirect all of that money to better funding Social Security, better funding Medicare, rebuilding infrastructure.
And all we'd have to do is?
And one more thing, paying off the debt.
Mm, yeah.
Agreed.
Change the tax code.
Yep.
The solution is a fair tax.
You
man.
Got it. We know how exactly where that, that one's going.
Yep, we did. But
how
we,
simple is that?
But we agree with you. You know that we do.
Yep.
We're big
supporters.
We haven't been talking about this fair tax thing, right? We got to talk about is taking back power and control.
Yep.
Who are we taking that power and control from? The federal government, the lobbyists, the politicians, the special interest groups, the deep state, and the crony capitalists that you've been talking about.
You got it. Absolutely.
The ones that are buying and selling the politicians. Oh.
I know.
Frustrating,
isn't it? We'll be talking more about that. I think there's enough things to go before the election, but after that, we'll get into it. Paul, I appreciate your call. And for anybody who's listening, this man has dedicated his adult life to getting this thing done, and we owe him a debt of gratitude. We appreciate it, Paul. Take care.
Fairtax.org. Check it
out. You got
it.
Okay.
Thanks. Love you guys.
Love you, too.
Bye.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to follow up, not on the previous call, but the gentleman that called in before, and he was concerned about the stock market, and then you guys had mentioned Wayfair and Overstock. And my question is this. I'm wondering if the rise in the price of these kinds of stocks have to much of it is because of the amount of calls that are being bought by people who are sitting at home and working at their office. And, you know, just so people know, when a call is sold, the dealer has to go out and actually buy the stock. So while I was on hold, I was looking at Wayfair, and I think in the next week they have about, I think, 60,000 calls that will probably most likely expire worthless.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that those shares will have to be sold by the dealer. But if you look at, like, Zoom, they have over 406,000 contracts, and each contract is 100 shares. And those expire on Friday. So, you know, as they expire or unwind, those shares will have to, you know, that creates supply, so that, you know, will force the price down. So my question is, how much of this rise, if you know, is caused by this back and forth between, you know, the Robin Hood people going in and buying options, and then the dealers forcing to purchase the stocks and then having to turn around and sell it? And I wonder if we're looking at a possible dip with, you know, having to sell all of these shares, but also then the unease about the election.
Yeah, and you got short sellers on top of all that, too. I don't really follow the options markets that closely, because we as CFPs are not, shall we say, we're not encouraged to use them.
Well, anything outside of covered calls.
Yeah, and even those, you have to have qualified investors. You have to get them qualified in order to do that. So we just literally do not have the time to follow that kind of thing closely, but it's very interesting.
However, I have been reading a lot about the almost this exact thing that you're talking about with, and specifically with Robinhood traders. And,
oh, they're having some trouble.
Yeah, they are having some trouble, but they also, the data that I have seen, and this does not, this is not a conclusive proof of anything, but it says that Robinhood investors have way less of an influence on the market than the media reports would have you believe. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've been seeing.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see if we can find any more data on that upcoming.
But it's a great question. I mean, and the call, people sitting at home with less to do and trading more definitely could lead to a rise in volatility. There's no doubt.
All right, we got to run. You want to take a quick shot at the trivia?
How many? I don't know the answer to the trivia, but let me just say this real quick.
Okay.
Out of the 406,000 contracts that have traded in Zoom, only 10,000 of them are actually active.
Hmm.
So that just tells you there's a lot of churning.
No doubt.
All right, we got to run. Thank you. Appreciate it. Call again soon. 17 people, 17 years. See you next week.